Colleagues, welcome back to the office and welcome to our podcast and presentation for today. Today's class is going to be Data Talk, hosting self-service and managed service options part dos. In this second half of the presentation, we're continuing a series that we started earlier this year, essentially looking at the major types of information services, applications, tools, products and things that we could do inside of our business and where to actually put them. You know, we have a lot of options more than ever before than to where to put information inside of our organization and what type of products and what type of vendors, what types of platforms that we might want to consider. And there's a lot of different ways of doing this. It's going to vary depending on the size of our organization, the complexity, you know, what type of remote access we need, what type of compliance frameworks that we might be have to follow. Maybe, for example, we're subject to things like PCI compliance or HIPAA compliance or more. So where do we put these services and what does it look like to utilize maybe a cloud provider versus a on-premise provider? So in the second half of our presentation today, we're going to look at some of the SaaS solutions that are out there, some of the major productivity applications that you might want to consider. We'll take a look at some additional remote hardware tools that you might want to consider. Remote tools and the type of hardware you might need to utilize those tools. So for example, different types of solutions for video conferencing, different ways of conducting remote meetings, different techniques, for example, for collaboration and more. We're also going to take a deeper dive into security and some different security considerations you might want to consider. For example, choosing between a VPN or choosing between different anti-malware solutions, as well as some of the best practices, for example, for reducing your risk and exposure as it relates to social engineering. There are some really kind of useful tools that are out there that can help you understand some of the risks and things that might be out there to train and educate your staff on what to do and what not to do. And so we'll try to provide some best practices and insight on what you might want to consider for avoiding those risks inside of your organization. All this and more in today's podcast. Now, before we get going, I do want to remind you that if you are a financial professional, and I hope you are, you can earn credits for CPE Today podcast through our partner, K2 Enterprises. It's super simple. After listening or watching, head on over to cpetoday.com, take a short 5-question quiz, and you will earn a credit for today's class. It's a fast, efficient, affordable way to staying on top of your credits so that you can get to maintain your license. Besides our podcast, CPE Today has a number of other awesome tools and services and products and courses that you might want to consider to stay on top of your game. There's classes in accounting, tax, computer technology, and more. It really is your one-stop shop for all continuing education needs if you're a financial professional. Today's course code is DASH2. Use that code and you can take your quiz today and earn a credit for today's class. So we're going to go ahead and get started. I will join you at the end of our presentation for 3 quick review questions, then we'll go ahead and get back on your way. But enjoy the second half of our Data Talk class. Thanks for being here, and we'll see you with some review questions at the end. So let's go ahead and talk through our purchasing guidance, giving some recommendations on what to expect, what to approve, and what potentially to avoid. The way you design your hosting and the way you design your cloud deployment is really going to depend first and foremost on scale and how big of a deployment you're looking to go with. There's a way to build this if you're expecting small business to medium-sized business, and there's certainly a different way to build this if you are a large-based organization. So let's take a look at a couple different factors, both for our small and medium as well as for our large organizations. Well, in a small business, usually I can get a decision pretty quickly. I'm working with the owner or I'm working with the executives. There might be 2 or 3 people, but we can get a decision typically within 6 months about what to do. These deployments are relatively simple. They don't take a lot of complexity. There's not a lot of additional redundancy. It's built to allow for things like rapid change. It's built to allow us to try a couple of different things, then ultimately make a decision and buy it. You know, when we look at, for example, a individual sole proprietor, or we're looking at a small business where it is a small group of ownership, you know, they're spending their personal money. I'm always conscious of, you know, is this company money or is this your money? Personally, as a software developer, I prefer to work with larger organizations, not saying I don't work with smaller companies, because when it's not the owner's money, personal money, it's usually an easier decision to make whether or not to invest in this tech. For larger organizations, we're typically working with committees. There will be a hierarchy. There might be a purchasing cycle, an RFP process. And again, that could be a lot of work depending on the nature of the project and what you're doing. We are typically building for scale. We're also building for redundancy, and we're also building for geographic disbursement. I've worked for a number of organizations that have multiple offices operating sometimes in several countries, and we have to take into account cultural differences and time zones and currency valuations and other things like that that could be quite difficult. Thankfully, with cloud-based providers like AWS, I worked on a client project recently. The company is incorporated in Malta. They have an office in the Czech Republic and an office in Johannesburg, South Africa. And I'm based here, my team's based on the West Coast of the United States. Well, we actually deployed their application to the Frankfurt AWS data center and the Cape Town data center without actually ever having to even leave our home offices, you know. But we could build for that kind of redundancy, availability, and geographical disbursement utilizing these cloud tools very easily now. Often with bigger organizations, we have data governance and corporate governance that we need to consider. There are increasingly government guidelines like CCPA, the California Consumer Protection Act, or GDPR, which is the General Data Protection Regulations of the European Union. Not following these corporate governance and data governances are not really optional now because the risk to the company could be catastrophic in terms of fees, fines, and other regulatory issues that can pop up. As well as evaluating and selecting these can be quite difficult because truthfully, you're not going to please everybody all the time. We typically have corporate budgets that allow for larger projects and allow for example, dedicated project managers to facilitate this technical change, as well as corporate support, help desk, and other things like that. Now, if we look at the approach that we're going to take, small to medium-sized businesses, we're looking at local networks, we're looking at private cloud, we're looking at a lot of SaaS-based application, remote desktop, and remote access tool, and a lot of turnkey hosting. Okay, it's a pretty simple process. Again, this is usually anywhere from a 4 to 6 month type project. Large organization, though, it could be very complex. Local networks, wide networks, private clouds, certainly there'll be some SaaS applications that will come in. Okay, we might be using remote desktop services over VPN. We could be using Citrix-based approach, virtual desktop-based approach, as well as utilizing multiple cloud hosting. And often, we'll utilize several different public clouds from AWS, Azure, and more, just depending on what we're looking to do. Now, a question that usually comes up here is, what the heck is this going to cost? You know, I can probably guess that some of you are thinking, and oh man, this sounds really expensive. And it really is going to vary depending on the deployment. I will tell you that if you are going to follow normal purchasing and upgrade cycles for cloud tech compared to on-premise tech, it's about a wash, I would say. There's often a lot of cost shifting. You might, for example, see your initial costs go down, but then you might spend some more money on for things like managed service providers, certainly for hosting fees. So I don't want to give you this impression that you should go to the cloud solely to save a tremendous amount of money. You're going to save some money, but mileage will vary depending on what you're looking to do. Now, we should think of things like, for example, our hardware. There's going to be hardware that's going to be required both at the company level as well as the end user level. The good news is if we're moving to cloud-based resources, the actual user's physical computer is not as relevant as it was even a couple of years ago. The big benefit to that is the user's computer doesn't really do that much. Almost all the processing is being done up in the cloud so that the user essentially just operates and works and just goes about their life just like anything else. However, you will be paying for subscriptions and software licenses and cloud hosting to go along with that. You know, if you're not buying that $5,000 server for your office, but instead you're moving that to AWS, well, you're not going to be spending $5,000 on that upfront, but you'll probably be spending $200 to $300 a month for the foreseeable future for AWS to host that data and host that application server for you. In my opinion, not the worst thing in the world, though, because I can upgrade easily. I can change instance types very easily. That figure represents the power, the cooling, the internet access. Overall, again, I think that's a pretty good trade-off. We certainly have to think through things like backup and communication, both for our servers as well as our end users. We also should think through things like support and what that might end up looking like. And the support can vary widely depending on the size of the organization that you're looking at. Some organizations, for example, will outsource help desk to a company so that, you know, when your clients are having a problem or you're having a server issue, you can just pick up the phone and call somebody. And they're ultimately dealing with AWS or Azure. You should also know that a lot of these costs will be one time as well as some recurring. When we build software for other people, one of the things I always want to make very clear to them is that we are going to be part of your life for the foreseeable future. When we build custom software, it's not a set it and forget it type thing, and updates aren't optional. I build a lot of mobile apps for our clients, okay? Apple pushes updates, a significant update once a year, and then other minor incremental updates multiple times per year. It is completely reasonable and will happen that that mobile app will stop working when Apple issues an update because they've deprecated an API or a service method or something that we're doing that will cause that app to stop functioning. You know, so realize with your cloud hosting, it's very similar. You know, there's going to be updates to Microsoft Windows and Server and SQL Server and other things like that that are going to be reoccurring charges that you're going to have to deal with as well. So you should consider the build per employee cost too, and consider the downtime per employee cost as well. You know, so if we were to look at kind of an overall project, you know, and this is kind of, let's say, per employee basis, you know, to outfit it a complete employee, you might, for example, have to spend about $2,500, you know, $1,800 for the laptop, you know, a couple hundred bucks for the keyboard, mouse, monitors, printer, and other stuff like that. You might have some specific setup fees with a host to get them started. $250 is very reasonable. Certainly training, and that could be payroll dollars, either to pay to a trainer or, you know, just paying the employee to learn a little bit more. You know, and it's not unreasonable to think of that could cost you about $5,000. But that's not the end of the story, okay? You have to pay the provider and the host to host that user's data on a regular basis, you know? So that might cost you $150 for that user's hosting. They're going to need software. Well, Adobe DC is $16 a month. Adobe Microsoft 365 can be anywhere from $12.50 to $57 per month. The $32 price point is for the E3 plan. You might need security software such as Cisco's Duo or KnowBe4. Well, and you could certainly have ongoing training. You know, for the price of going to that cloud, it's not necessarily free, or at least it shouldn't be. You should be paying for these things. It could be anywhere from about $300 to $500 per month, depending on the specific needs of the organization. So what is needed in all situations? Well, I would tell you good, strong communication, good, clean access to the internet, and whenever possible, redundancy in communication. That's a concentration risk with respect to working with the cloud. If your employee, you know, doesn't have access to the internet, they're essentially useless to you. Certainly, good security devices, including firewalls, high availability failover, certainly at least at the corporate level and at the server level. That's at a fee typically above and beyond the initial hosting. You know, we will build whatever type of deployment a client is looking for, but if they want to be able to fail over, for example, to another availability zone in AWS or in Azure, well, we typically have to build that out as well. You know, ultimately, you need to think about with respect to your downtime, how fast you want to be able to come back online. And not everything needs to come back immediately. You know, some things need to come back as fast as possible. You know, if it's customer records, if it is customer ordering procedures or something like that, you know, your interruption of ability to do business could cost you a lot of money. So in that particular case, you might want to have high availability for your ordering systems, but maybe it's not as important, for example, for having high availability for other aspects of your organization. Maybe reporting, for example, is something that can come at a later time. Maybe it is, for example, something that, you know, like business insights or something like that, your dashboarding tool, where you might want to say, you know what, this is really important, but it doesn't need to come back on immediately. Good networking equipment like switches, certainly good security services like multi-factor authentication. I will point out, you know, there's no laws specifying we have to use MFA. Again, that's something typically requested by the client and built into the applications. Good laptops and workstations, always with solid-state disks. Solid-state disks have no moving parts. They're essentially a memory chip. They're fast. They're very inexpensive now compared to what they used to cost a couple of years ago. And they consume a lot less power, giving us better utilization on our mobile computers. Multiple monitors, anywhere from two or more. I'm personally a fan of as many as you could possibly have. On my normal work from home, I have six. I have three and three. And I'll tell you what, I can't ever go back because I love having the ability to have a big desk and it makes me very productive. Scanners. You know, thankfully, I think paper is going down, but still the ability to have and scan paper documents to make virtual representations and get them into our document system, still very important and useful. As well as better network appliances such as storage area networks and better performance, not requiring a VPN. Now, there are seven variants of remote access inside of our organizations. The cloud is at the core of all of these, and just depending on the application, the organization, the use case will depend on what we do. You know, some of the most basic ones are going to be services such as a VPN, or virtual private network, which should be the basis of any organizational connectivity and should be an option that you should consider using. In my opinion, it shouldn't be the first option, but it should be a option, and sometimes you're going to need it and sometimes not. Likewise, remote access to desktops, either using remote desktop protocol or services such as RealVNC and TeamViewer, they should be a option. They should not be the option. Remote access desktop is not the best option anymore. We can access services in public clouds and AWS and Azure, private clouds using Citrix and virtualized applications. We can use virtual desktops using VDI applications. We could also use things like a web-based relay. My personal best option and the one that I would tell you to build towards for your organization would be this SaaS-based offering with digital plumbing tools connecting different things together, as this is the most modern, the fastest, the securest, and available on pretty much every device that you choose to use. Let's take a look at this, what this might look like for using hosted desktops and kind of what that overall experience might be. To kind of give you the infrastructure as an example here, what we have is that we will typically have a user. That user, for example, could be coming in on a desktop computer, a notebook computer, a laptop. Okay, they're going to go through some sort of gateway service that will direct them ultimately to some sort of infrastructure. And the company will have part of this infrastructure allocated maybe to their tax applications or their document applications. There'll be a variety of helper servers and systems, such as maybe VMware managing that cluster, or maybe Active Directory, which is managing the overall security and authentication. But ultimately, we're running on dedicated hardware that that company has set up. Now, this is an example of what it looks like in Thomson Reuters' virtual office suite. User logs in. They're presented with a range of applications. They click a button. It pops up and allows them to be able to access that particular client's tax return and be able to work. And those applications are streamed to the user in the same way that a YouTube video is streamed to you when you watch it on your phone or on your desktop. You're not actually downloading it. It's really just kind of sending bit for bit for the video experience. It's the same with Citrix. It's just sending you bit for bit for what that app is. And it transmits those changes. So when you open a menu, it is, you know, kind of emulating opening the menu on the server side and sending you what the representation of that menu looks like. Let's take a look at the private cloud. You know, so this is using an example from NMGI, Randy Johnston's company. And this is what it looks like if you were to use their services. Okay. So you would typically open up your favorite internet browser. It might be, for example, Microsoft Edge or Firefox or Chrome. You'll navigate to some website. In this case, this is their Citrix server. Now, once you're here, you would go ahead and you would put in your username and password. Now, I would recommend that whenever possible, you utilize two-factor authentication. And Randy's deployment uses this as well. They have a couple of different authentication methods. For example, using Duo Push, you can also call. You can also get a passcode generated by that user's device. And when you put this in, with that password, it will ultimately authenticate you into their service and allow you to work. Once you're logged in, you're presented with the tools that are allocated to your experience. They could be internal tools uniquely built for the needs of the company. They could be productivity tools like Microsoft Office. They could be accounting tools that are used for line of business operations. Now, with the Citrix experience, the apps, again, are just streamed to you. They just come to you in the same way that a YouTube video would be streamed to you. Let's say Randy, for example, wanted to open up an application. You know, he would click on the application that he would like. Citrix 365 is going to load up. And once it loads up, it's going to present him with his virtual desktop interface. That will allow him to be able to operate that server like he's sitting right in front of it. In this case, he's running Windows 10. He clicks on maybe, for example, his VDI application for Microsoft Outlook or Word or Excel. So it loads up to him and it's streamed to him, even though that actual computer is not hosted in his physical space. It could be, for example, running in a data center in the NMG office in Hutchinson, Kansas. And then once he's in that Citrix environment, he can interact with that computer just like it's his normal computer, running Teams, running Outlook, you know, running Internet Explorer, Edge, Firefox, or maybe even running his presence detection and running his actual phone system. All of it would be streamed to him. Now, if he were to utilize another computer, it would work totally fine. He would open up that computer, log in the exact same way. He might need to download the Citrix client to make this work, but it's a one-time download, and regardless of other applications he uses, it will load up for him and work really, really well. Now, if you haven't got the experience to be able to build this for yourself, you might want to consider a managed service provider and a company that can build this cloud out for you. There's lots of different providers that you can consider, but a favorite of K2 is going to be Centrum. Centrum has been in the cloud hosting environment for many, many years, over a decade at this point, and they are a full service IT partner for your company. They're not just a cloud company. So where AWS is going to focus on, for example, just providing infrastructure, Centrum is going to help your organization as your virtual CIO to help you make good and effective security and technology decisions for your company. They will help you, for example, build a strategy, find a security plan, develop a security plan, implement it inside of your organization. Now, often you're going to be utilizing their services, which you should use, and they're really well built. They have a facility in, I believe, in Denver and another one on the East Coast as well. They take care of all the technology for your organization so that you can essentially just focus on the needs of the company, whatever the company is choosing to do. So they will do things like your backups automatically. They build in disaster recovery and business continuity automatically. And most importantly, they have a dedicated service team available 24 hours a day that you can call if you have a problem. Again, AWS, Azure, you know, for the most part, there's nobody you can call. And it's not really designed for that. You know, again, if you're using their tools, there's an expectation that you know what you're doing. You know, if you don't have that kind of capacity, having somebody that you can call that can do things like your updates and be proactive and make security recommendations and changes for you can be very helpful. In terms of the security methodologies that they employ, they're following best practices in all aspects of this. They maintain two different offline backups using separate technology so you don't create a concentration risk. They, for example, can replicate your backup data to an independent center, as well as AWS and others as well. So if you want to take it out of their infrastructure, you can as well. They utilize multiple AI-based security anti-malware solutions. They have a full team just monitoring the availability and reliability of their software, and thankfully, always employing best practices, including things like two-factor authentication and strong passwords. They normally, for example, will also include external auditors to come in and review their methodology to ensure that it is still meeting specific criteria. That includes things like SOC 2, compliancy, which is an AICPA standard for services, as well as HIPAA for patient and healthcare data, and FIPS for other cryptographic and security standards. Okay. Now, why do I recommend this? It's just efficient and easy. And if you're a financial services firm, you know what? You're not really in the IT service business, you're probably going to benefit by just having an organization handle this for you. Their strategy works well, and it's worked well for many of the organizations that I've worked with over the years. I like the fact that they focus on providing a custom cloud, utilizing best of breed applications for whatever client chooses to utilize, versus a more siloed approach using Thomson or Intuit, where you're locked into their specific tools. With Centrum, you could say, hey, I want to use Lacerte, I want to use UltraTax, and I want to use whatever other solution you want. And they'll build the cloud specific to you. They also make onboarding very simple and easy. They have dedicated project managers. They have a very robust migration plan. They offer a testing environment to ensure that it's going to work well for your organization. And more importantly, there's that person you can call if you have additional questions. If you might need service support that you're going to get that you would not get with other providers that are out there. So let's go ahead and talk about some software as a service solution stacks and some different innovative tools that might be really helpful for you to consider as a license for your organization. Now, software as a service is going to be something that will be just streamed to you. The user is not responsible, for example, for things such as configuring the data or, for example, backup or security. They just work. And if they don't work, it's not the responsibility of the user to be able to make them work. It's the responsibility of the organization and the vendor to do that. So, for example, with 365, okay, that would include, for example, your software licensing. It would include the Excel and PowerPoint, as well as things like SharePoint and OneDrive and others. Well, it's Microsoft's responsibility to ensure that it's up and secure and working for you. You don't have to do anything other than work on your spreadsheets and upload your files to SharePoint. They take care of it. SharePoint is a good example, as well as Microsoft Exchange, where there is a traditional desktop counterpart that's existed forever that you could still buy and license and put inside of your own infrastructure, but you're going to be responsible for maintaining that. I can tell you right now, it's way more cost effective to utilize 365, and also better from a risk perspective to shift that burden to Microsoft to ensure that your SharePoint and Exchange are properly configured. Exchange, from years of experience, is a miserable application to configure from an IT servicing perspective. It's so complicated versus 365, which is just so turnkey and works. So in terms of your must-have, definitely 365, definitely Adobe DC, the document cloud. You know, if you're going to utilize multiple Adobe products, there's certainly their Creative Cloud, which I personally, and that's the one that I personally use. Whatever you choose to use, definitely some version of Adobe would be great. Other applications you might want to consider, whether if it's not 365, might be Zoho or it might be Google Workspace. Regardless of which one you choose, you're definitely going to want to choose one out of the three. Other examples of things that you might want would be things like Calendly or Microsoft Bookings to manage your appointments. Tic-Tac-Calculate, PDF Flyer to do work papers. TechSmith's Camtasia or Snagit to do things like screenshots and more. Now, for productivity, again, you got 365, Zoho One, and Google Workspace. You might need one, you might need two. In our particular business, we utilize 365, primarily the enterprise plans, or what I recommend, the E3 and the E5, as well as Google Workspace. Now, I like 365. I think it's a fantastic suite. It's probably the overall best value to any business. I like the enterprise plans because of the features and additional functionality that comes above and beyond the small and medium business plans. I also like Google a lot, too. I love the Google Gmail and calendaring applications. And in our company, we utilize both. We actually utilize 365 for substantially everything but calendaring and email, although we plan on switching probably everything over to 365 and eliminating our Google bill in the future. But if your company is predominantly not really sophisticated, doesn't need a lot of technical additional components, wants to be natively cloud, no installable applications, looking for a better price point, I would say Google is definitely the one you would want to consider. But if you're utilizing a lot of the existing Microsoft tools, you can't go wrong with Microsoft. Now, if you want a good third opinion, something that's not Google, something not Microsoft, that is where I think Zoho is a great fit. Zoho has over 50 apps. It's beautifully integrated across the ecosystem. They've got tools, for example, from accounting, customer relationship management, marketing, remote assisting, and more. They also have all your normal desktop productivity stuff too, like your email, your spreadsheets, your word processing, and stuff like that. So pick one of the three. You know, you really can't go wrong with choosing one out of them. You know, a question I usually get asked a lot is, hey, what do you think is best? And the answer is, I mean, it depends on what you're looking for. I can think of many different companies that have been happy with 365, as well as Zoho, as well as Google Workspaces. I would tell you that you should focus on the needs of the organization and the needs of your clients. Honestly, if you're very happy with Zoho, there's probably not a lot of benefit to switch to Google. If Google is working really well for your company, you know, 365, while in my opinion, for getting the Microsoft licensing definitely makes sense, you know, it might not make sense, you know, for your organization. You should think of the collective needs of all your people, and you should also think of the return on investment. Once you go down the road with one of these providers, it's very costly to be able to just drop it and switch it to another one. So make your decision and then stick to it. Don't make price the sole expectation for this decision making. They're all, when you think about it long term, they're all relatively very similar in price. I wouldn't also focus on the totality of the feature set. I would, for example, look at some of the individual applications because there could be very compelling reasons. In my mind, a compelling reason to choose 365 above and beyond just the licensing for Office is Microsoft Teams and SharePoint. For our business, it's been absolutely, truly transformative. And those are reasons alone to choose that solution. So some decision points that you should consider for choosing one of these application platforms. What does the user interface look like? Is it effective and work well for your company? If you're looking for simple, fast, and easy, definitely I would tell you Google or Zoho is going to have the overall simplest and easiest user interface. So if you have a less tech-savvy workforce, maybe you have people that are not as technologically sufficient, well, utilizing something very simple, you're probably going to get better overall performance and I would say kind of overall better success than you will something more sophisticated like 365. You should think about your files, what you're going to need to store and how you're going to need to access it. Lots of options with respect to file storage. Thankfully, Zoho, Google, and Microsoft all come with different file storage and come with space that you can utilize in the cloud in their data center that you could utilize to store your organizational files. In my opinion, I think 365 is a clear winner here. The default amount of storage is a terabyte per user, which far exceeds both Zoho and Google and is more than most users will need. Additionally, the integration of SharePoint and OneDrive with Windows is beautiful. It's seamless, it's turnkey, and it works really, really well. So that essentially the storage in the cloud and the storage on the user's computer all is a fantastic solution. Additionally, you should also have the ability to upgrade with respect to some additional storage if needed. Most of us are utilizing the Microsoft Office suite. In my opinion, having some sort of cloud provider natively integrate and both Zoho, Google do. Office obviously is integrated into 365, so it's natively there, works well. Although I will tell you, when it comes to utilizing 365 and Office together, it's like PB&J, it just works. Sharing and collaboration. All these tools support different sharing and collaboration models. In today's environment, in the COVID world, I think, again, 365 is probably the best. Teams and SharePoint, from a collaboration perspective, allow you to be able to do collaboration on Excel documents, PowerPoint documents like nobody else, and no other provider can provide. When it comes to mobile support, I think that Google probably wins. I think their mobile apps overall are the best, although 365 is pretty good too. So let's go ahead and round out our solution and talk through some additional tools and some additional capabilities that we might want to have present in our cloud deployment and some additional things that we might want to consider as we're starting to plan this for our company. In terms of our hardware, we have some must-haves as well as some nice-to-haves. You know, I would tell you a good, properly configured computer, no matter what computer you go with, what brand, whether it be Lenovo, HP, Dell, or whatever, definitely a solid-state disk, a minimum of 16 gigabytes of RAM, and as much as you possibly can get, as much as possible dedicated GPU, as well as a screen that is high resolution. Okay, solid state disks, no moving parts, no heat. That means it's going to be more energy efficient as well as much faster. RAM, random access memory, that's your computer's ability to multitask. The more RAM you have, the more applications you can have open, the more tabs of Chrome you can be running. Most of us are running upwards of a dozen different applications at any given time, as well as a myriad of services on the back end that are managing things on our behalf. That's not going away anytime soon. You know, I could tell you that every computer I have has a minimum of 16, but I try to get up to 32 whenever possible because that makes my ability to multitask go much better. Certainly good security appliances like a good firewall, a dedicated firewall in your network is a must. Absolutely utilizing Windows firewall for the actual computer itself. A good keyboard and mouse, and if you are utilizing in a multi-user environment, having a copy of some sort can be very effective. Other nice to have, scanner. Although, as I told you, I tend to use my mobile phone more than the actual dedicated scanner I got sitting behind me. Nice big monitor. It's a nice to have. It's not a need to have. I'm just as happy with my 15-inch USB monitor as I am my big display here if I'm working from the road. Digital pens can be nice. I tend not to use them. I tend to use my finger more than my pen. A fast printer. Nice to have, not a need to have. I don't really do that much printing anymore. So, you know, that's kind of a nice thing. And certainly a good smartphone and or a voice over internet protocol phone. I would tell you another absolute must have is some sort of video conferencing solution. And I actually think you need two video conferencing solutions. You need something for internal meetings as well as something for external meetings. For internal meetings, it would be a solution such as Microsoft Teams or Slack or Google Hangouts that will allow you to be able to video conference and chat with your team without having to send invitations. I utilize Teams for our company. I can click on my business partner's name, for example, and instantly start a communication line with him. I can send him an instant message. He can send me a file. We can video chat with each other and it just seamlessly works. And it's beautifully integrated with 365, with SharePoint and everything else that goes along with it. As great as that is, truthfully, not the best for, let's say, a customer or a vendor that I need to meet with. I think Zoom is probably the overall best experience. And it's a pretty reasonable fee if you choose to go with the pro versions, like $20 a month. And I definitely get $20 of value in utilizing Zoom. So I'd recommend you have something for working with your team, as well as something that you have for meeting with clients and customers. If you don't choose to use Zoom, there are plenty of other solutions. GoToMeeting, WebEx, Uber Conference, and others. You know, there are lots of choices, and honestly, you really can't go wrong with respect to choosing a solution. So for your remote meetings, as well as kind of instant messaging, you got one of either Teams or Zoom. There's also other tools that you can consider as well. Ultimately, you just want something to be able to communicate internally with your team, as well as something to communicate with your external or people outside of your organization. Lots of different options that you might want to consider. Okay. Now, you're also going to want to consider different collaboration tools that allow you to be able to work and communicate and talk. And again, your choices really kind of vary in this. Lots of different options with respect to being able to work like you're one cohesive unit. You know, the beautiful thing now about 2021 and beyond is the fact that almost everything is natively in the cloud. And being natively in the cloud means that regardless of where the user is in the context of collaboration, we're all remote to the actual software and all remote relative to the data. These collaboration tools will allow for sharing of documents as well as co-authoring and real-time editing of a document with each other. A couple of the different options you might want to consider. Again, Google Hangouts, Microsoft Teams, Slack, Zoho Connect. Lots of different options that you might want to consider here. But in my opinion, there's really only two major ones. If you're utilizing the Microsoft infrastructure to begin with, look no further. Teams is definitely going to want be what you want to use because of its integration with all the other services in Microsoft's ecosystem that you're already paying for. However, if you're not using Teams, the other option I would strongly recommend you take a look at would be Slack. I've loved Slack. I've got many clients that are utilizing Slack, and often they're utilizing, let's say, Zoho and Slack, or they're utilizing Google and Slack. Very rarely will we have people who are utilizing 365 and Slack. Slack is a separate application, and most of the functionality is replicated in Teams. So why not just use Teams to get from the get-go? You should also consider some sort of project management solution. Project management solutions allow for your organization to be able to track and monitor security inside of the company for projects perspective. What this allows you to do is to be able to create a project, allocate those projects into separate different tasks, whether they be productivity, whether they be building a security plan, whether they be working on a client project or an internal project. You can take a project, divide it up into its smaller pieces, and then assign those different pieces to different people in the company to do. When it comes to project management, lots of options here. There are three that I personally recommend. Okay. I'm a big fan of Asana. I'm a big fan of Trello, and I'm a big fan of another solution that's not listed on here, which is called, Microsoft Planner. Asana is a true blue standard project management solution. In the truest sense of the word, it's a traditional system where you take a project, you divide those projects into specific tasks, and then from those tasks, you can assign those tasks to different people in the company. One of the reasons I like Asana is that it is really simple. It's not a complicated system to be able to use. It is a solution that's really kind of started around how can we make project management really simple and easy. Okay. And additionally, you can manage almost all of Asana directly through your inbox or through its mobile app. So you can check it out by going to asana.com. You can sign up and try this out. Another reason I really like this is that they have a free plan that's free forever. It's their basic plan. And it's not like a tiny little bite-sized thing. You can actually use this to run inside your company. It supports unlimited projects, unlimited tasks, unlimited email. It's limited to only 15 people. But if you're looking for a small business, or you're looking, for example, maybe for a nonprofit you're a part of, maybe your church or the Boy Scout group, and you need to do a larger project, you know, that requires more than just maybe some spreadsheet and email, Asana is a pretty good option for you. And its free plan is what I've used for many years and been very happy with. About 3 or 4 years ago, I switched from the traditional style of project management where you manage based off project and task to what we refer to as the Kanban style of project management. The Kanban style of project management is where you have cards with each card representing a specific task, and then you use swim lanes to visually represent where you are in a specific project. In this example, this is just the Trello example here. We have our, swim lanes, each representing a specific type of project, with each of these representing a specific task in a project. Let me see if I can find one other quick example here. Okay. So I actually used Trello to plan my wedding, which is going to be next month. And inside of this, you can, for example, set up your Trello board to be by time. In this particular case, they've got, you know, what you should be doing 12 months out, 10 months out, 8 months out. So you could start visually setting up your project with these different stages of the project, with each card representing a specific task. One of the things I like about this is that as you're working through, you can pick up a card and move it from one swim lane to the other. Cards support a variety of things such as descriptions, labels, checklists, and more. And I, as a visual person, really like this because I can lay things out and get a sense of status and get a sense of progress for the different stages of the project that I am working on. So either one of those tools would work well. I ended up using and switching from Trello to Microsoft Planner only because we utilize 365 and Planner is very close to Trello. Although I will tell you, if you had to choose between the two of them, Trello is definitely the better solution. You might want to consider some sort of client portal solution for document exchange with your clients. Lots of options with respect to different portal solutions, but a clear winner in my book is Lisco. Lisco is a really cool secure client portal solution where you can interchange files with clients with ease. They have a dedicated mobile app as well as a dedicated web portal where you could, for example, upload a document. Let's say it's an 8879, send it out to the client for their review, signature, and return back to you. They take care of all the facilitation, the security, and other things that go along with it. It's offered in a SaaS environment with really kind of no requirement for setup on behalf of the firm or organization. One of the other really cool things I like about this, let's say, for example, is something like the engagement letter. Okay, well, I can go ahead and set up an engagement letter, allocate it, and say, hey, this is something I want them to review. I can assign it to a particular person in the client organization. Okay, and then I can also set things like a due date. And the software will automatically follow up with that particular client on a regular interval to ensure that something like the review letter or the client management letter, the representation letter, the engagement letter, the audit letter, whatever it ends up being, is actually signed and done. So it kind of facilitates this regular follow-up, which I really think is particularly cool. Okay, we're just about to the end of our presentation here. Let's go ahead and finish with a couple of security considerations. Now, when it comes to security, there are a couple of core must-haves. For example, multi-factor authentication in 2021, in my book, is an absolute must-have. If you don't have a core foundation of security, you really have nothing, and you can't really be able to move past that. Apart from that, I also think good security appliances, great reputable brands include things like Cisco, SonicWall, WatchGuard, and others to sit in front of your network to monitor traffic coming in and out. You might also want to consider other security training solutions. A good example of this is KnowBefore. KnowBefore is a solution that you can get inside of your organization to help increase security awareness inside of the company. They do things like phishing testing, you know, where they will, for example, email your staff and will train them on what to be on the lookout for phishing, as well as helping them not to be able to recognize what kind of links they should click on and what they should not, as well as other technologies around the perimeter, technologies such as FIDO, Azure Active Directory up in the cloud, Microsoft's enterprise mobility experience for mobile handset can all work really, 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 really well. Now, when it comes to VPN software, lots of different applications you can consider. You could go with a more hardware, corporate firewall approach using services such as Cisco and SonicWall. There's also a number of individual firewalls, you know, for example, Proton VPN, TunnelBear VPN. There are free solutions as well, including OpenVPN and others. There are a variety of different solutions that you might want to consider, and a VPN is a great option when it comes to utilizing public internet. So if you're, for example, connecting from a hotel Wi-Fi, connecting from Starbucks Wi-Fi, having this VPN software in place is going to ensure that that local network doesn't infiltrate your specific computer. Now, when it comes to antivirus, anti-malware, lots of different options that you might want to choose from every price point from free all the way up to premium. Okay, here's some different examples. My personal recommendation that I've utilized for many years is Trend Micro. I can tell you, regardless of the solution that you choose to go with, you should average about $50 per user per year with respect to your budgeting for security, for anti-malware anyways. That doesn't include, for example, firewalls and other hardware appliances that you might need, but that's about what I typically recommend for budgeting for your organization and with your anti-malware subscription. All right, folks, welcome back. Let's go ahead and finish up our podcast for today with three quick review questions. Our first question, what does the ability to work from anywhere securely involve? Does it involve encryption? Absolutely, you bet it involves encryption. Encryption is the fundamental and backbone nature of being able to communicate securely. If we don't have encryption, we can't ensure that our client data and our firm organizational data remain secure. Remote access software, absolutely. Lots of different types of remote access software that we can consider. But at whatever we end up going with, we got to have something. Maybe we're using TeamViewer, maybe we're using remote VNC or remote desktop connection, or maybe even a simple VPN. Is it consistent internet availability? Yeah, absolutely. For working remote, we absolutely need the ability to get online and stay connected. So the correct answer here is all of the above. Our next review question. Which of the following applications are productivity suites available under the SaaS model, software as a service? Is it Google Workspace? Absolutely it is. 100% of almost, well, 100% of all Google products are cloud-based, accessible either on a browser or through our mobile device. Is it Microsoft 365? Absolutely. 365 has the added benefit of providing desktop licenses to the applications we already know and love, but it is still very much a SaaS-based product. Is it Zoho One? Absolutely. All Zoho functionality is delivered through either a mobile app or through the website. The correct answer here is all of the above. Our final review question. Which of the following security risks associated with remote workers have become more problematic due to employees' constant working from home? And I'm guessing that's probably in conjunction with COVID-19 and kind of the changing nature of the office workplace due to the pandemic. Okay. Is it the risk of employees falling victim to phishing schemes delivered by work email? Well, that's still very much a risk, and that's something we still should consider. Is it the risk of working workers' compensation claims due to virus exposure during the pandemic? I guess that could be a risk as well. But the one we talked about in today's course was the security threat posed by cheap home networking hardware that uses firmware riddled with backdoors and other security vulnerabilities. So ideally, we always want to be using business-grade hardware and software whenever business is being conducted to ensure that there always is a good measure of reliability and security with the work that we are doing. So that does bring us to the end of our presentation today. In this class and in this series, we talked about different remote strategies that will fit your overall business strategy. We reviewed best options related to your company in terms of what you might want to consider for implementing remote data work and remote servers for your organization. We discussed internal and external hosting options and reviewed some of the different expenses that we could come to expect with respect to different remote access procedures. Now, before we go, I do want to remind you that you can earn credits for today's class, and I accidentally misspoke earlier in our podcast. Today's remote access code is DHS2. So if you're looking to get credits for today's class, head on over to cpetoday.com. Use course code DHS2. You take a quick 5-question quiz, you've got a credit, and you're well on your way to maintaining your licensing. If you enjoyed our content, and I hope you do, please consider connecting with us on social media. You can find us pretty much on all platforms at CPE Today. You can find us on YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and more. And you can always get access to our content on your schedule through wherever you happen to get your content, including Apple Podcasts, Spotify, SoundCloud, and others. We'd absolutely love for you to leave a review, give us some feedback, and let us know what type of content you'd like in the future. As always, it is my pleasure being with you here and presenting this content material. I wish you all the best, and I'll see you back in the office the next time around. Take care.